Management by Objectives, A System of Managerial Leadership. Author, George S. Odierne. The New Look in Management. Managers of tomorrow won't spring from the same roots as those of today. The youngest of today, who simply imitates the educational pattern of a chairman of the board who was educated 40 years ago, may find that the model has become outdated. Managerial success becomes associated more and more with the performance of the corporation itself, and only incidentally with personal, off-the-job status symbols. The job becomes its own measure of success and high pay. Large but functional offices, the use of expensive accounts, a company plan, and a company lodge become the ingredients attendant upon success. The climate of the early 1960s set the stage for the development of the manager of the future, the manager of situations. This manager will differ from the pressure artist and the human relator. Let us delineate those differences. He will be judged by what his followers do. He will have no definable executive personality. He will make things happen. He'll be more of a generalist than in the past. He'll be an organizer. He'll be oriented toward results and responsibility. Ends versus means in modern management. The corporate managers are caught on the thorns of a dilemma. On one hand, they must show a profit, and on the other, they are obliged to provide a high level of well-being for their employees and confine their business practices to the commonly accepted ethical standards of the society in which they operate. Managers are caught in a cost-price squeeze. In an effort to slip out this squeeze, managers have taken a renewed interest in competition on a price basis. But while management is off on a race to protect the profits margins of businesses, it must also contend with the widespread movement toward improved human relations in industry. The decline of risk-bearing. Today, every large corporation has its Department of Stockholder Relations, testifying to the need to insulate chief executives from pressures that might stimulate excessive interest in larger gains at risk to the owners. Among the fastest growing industries are those financial and banking institutions that sell what John R. Commons called risk prevention services, assuring bureaucrats of the eradication of actually determinable hazards. The areas of uninsurable risks in business are constantly being reduced, and for sound economic reasons. The administrator is a preserver rather than an innovator. Inside the corporation, there has been a marked proliferation of risk reduction department. Armed with the tools of modern mathematics, they have introduced a more rational concept of risk than was ever before possible. The creative destructive hypothesis. The new capitalism of the corporate society was an evolutionary phase from which capitalism could emerge stronger and more socially useful than before. This would be achieved by a process of creative destruction, because capitalism is by nature a form of method of economic change. And not only never was, but never can be, stationary. In the large corporate entity, survival is a real problem, requiring as much attention to innovation and vitality as it ever had before. To make creative destruction work forcibly for the preservation of capitalism, innovation and the sweeping away of less effective enterprises had to be rampant. But the successful execution of this most necessary process was blocked by the internal forces of self-generated bureaucracy. The major block to the creation of a society of high production and rising standards of living lay in the suppression of risk-taking which the industrial society has built into its very fiber. Concern over equitable distribution and the alleviation of discontent growing out of people's ego and social needs have diverted our attention from the fact that our physical needs can be satisfied. Overattention to equitable distribution of the existing product can only have the inevitable effect of proliferating bureaucracy inside business, blunting its growth, and stemming innovation. Administrative practices and human relations have pertinence as they ensure bureaucratic proliferation of administrators and self-maintenance at the expense of growth if necessary. The new authority. The new leader makes no decisions, but operates a decision-making apparatus. Leadership is a relationship, rather than a function performed by one man, pulling together symbolic chief and participating followers. Three forces work to shape the actions of leaders in the new corporate society. 1. Selection for the qualities which make for effective membership in the bureaucratic framework. 2. Training in scientific management and rational system of leadership and executive functioning. And 3. Alteration of the environment to isolate and possibly expel the traditional entrepreneur and risk-taker and the innovator from any sensitive location where his impact might be disruptive. The system of management by objectives. The system of management by objectives is a particular way of thinking about management. Let's begin by placing our system in this conceptual framework. 1. The basic structure of the corporation is the organizational form often called a hierarchy. Management by objectives is a system for making that structure work, and to bring about more vitality and personal involvement of the people in the hierarchy. 2. Management by objectives provides for the maintenance and orderly growth of the organization by means of statements of what is expected for everyone involved and measurement of what is actually achieved. 3. As a system, management by objectives is especially applicable to professional and managerial employees. It can extend as far down as first-line supervisors and also cover many staff and technical positions. 4. Management by objectives helps overcome many of the chronic problems of managing managers and professionals. Learning to manage. How does a man learn how to manage? By and large, there are three basic sources of management knowledge: imitation, situational thinking, and behavioral science. 1. Imitation. Probably the greatest single source of management knowledge is the boss's behavior. This would suggest that it is sound career planning to choose good bosses to work for. It also implies that the superior has a responsibility to behavior in a way that is worthy of imitation, since this will always happen. 2. Situational thinking. The second way of finding out what makes managers successful is through situational analysis and situational thinking. This means that instead of studying the actions of individual managers, we study the entire situation in which they work. 3. Behavioral science. Most good work in management aims at accomplishing some specific end, achieving a particular goal, solving a particular problem, or reaching some fixed terminal point. The definition of these objectives for the whole organization, for all its subordinate organizations, and for the individuals in them is the logical starting place for management improvement. Installing the system. The primary condition that must be met in installing a system of management by objectives is the support, endorsement, or permission of the principal manager in the organizational unit where the system is to be used. Hence, the place to begin an installation is with the top man in the organization where it is to be started. Usually, the installation proceeds through the following phases. 1. Familiarization of the top man and his key executives with the system and how it operates. 2. Following the decision to install the system, the top man and his subordinates program measures of organization performance. 3. Goal-setting methods are then extended down through the organization to the first-line supervisory level through a successive series of meetings between the various organizational units and their superiors. 4. The necessary changes are made in such areas as the appraisal system, the salary and bonus procedures, and the delegation of responsibility. Ambiguous policies are clarified and procedures that may be blocking effective operation of the system are amended. Other changes, such as the installation of a system of responsibility accounting by the cost department, are also made. The problem of the annual performance review. Many annual reviews, as presently conducted, lead to managerial superstitions which have a distracting or positively damaging effect upon people's performance. That is to say, they lead subordinates into unnecessary and irrelevant acts upon the false supposition that such behavior will bring about better reviews. In motivating people to be productive and creative in their work, we cannot rely on money alone. This conclusion is not only based on psychology, but also upon economics. In times of prosperity and full employment, we must rule out the negative motivation supplied by the employee's fears of losing his job, or of economic reprisal for less than excellent performance. In dealing with skilled manpower, the emphasis moved toward some positive means of non-financial motivation, and it is within this environment that most of our modern systems of appraisal have been developed. The limitations of management by objectives. At its best, management by objectives has certain limitations. 1. It can't appraise and completely identify potential. 2. The system presumes that the man and his boss will together establish suitable standards that will serve the company well. 3. It implies that the boss understands the strict limitations on what he is supposed to do. 4. In action, it often aggravates a problem that appraisal should help to solve. It stresses results alone and doesn't provide for methods of achieving them. Using value systems as a standard for executive appraisal is admittedly an uncomfortable step, but one that seems to be necessary if business is to overcome the deadening effects of conformity and repression of the individual. A system that merely polices alikeness and conformity does not take account of values. Its standards are neutral and deal only with performance. This could be dangerous. Within the framework of the management by objective system, The annual review offers the hope of avoiding these damaging effects, provided it is identified as a goal-setting meeting instead of an appraisal interview. Such an approach is positive in tone, looks forward rather than backward, yet at the same time requires a summarizing of past events to lay the groundwork for establishing goals and standards for the future. Thus, the cumulative feedback of results attained is not eliminated, but takes place within the context of a meaningful behavioral purpose.